which is why the business impact of this proposed street fee is so hugely out of scale with Portland's neighborhood businesses and business districts. We all agree that well-maintained and safe roads are critical for business success. That said, based on feedback from neighborhood business district leaders, Venture Portland has concerns about the fee as currently proposed, as well as recommendations for improvement. On business rates, the trip model being used to generate business rates is based on national data and does not take into account the unique nature of Portland's neighborhood businesses. As I said earlier, 98% of neighborhood businesses have five or fewer employees and work out of proportionately small spaces. Using trip generation rates for superstores, strip malls, and drive-throughs doesn't make sense for the size and scope of neighborhood businesses. Recommendation: Portland size the fee model. Broadway Books on Northeast Broadway generates significantly less trip volume than a book superstore and shouldn't be charged as one. Posey's Cafe in Kenton generates fewer trips than a coffee shop with a drive-through and also shouldn't be charged as one. Recommendation: make the calculator user-friendly. Help businesses understand and plan for increased costs by streamlining business categories and providing definitions. Currently, an eatery like Wilf's in the Pearl has to search through a long laundry list of unwieldy and alphabetized terms like fast food restaurant, high turnover restaurant, or quality restaurant, alphabetized under F, H, or Q, instead of simply searching for restaurant and then being able to pull out the appropriate category. Recommendation: flip the fee rate discount. Currently, the smallest businesses that generate the fewest trips are paying the highest per trip rate. Costs should ratchet up per trip instead of down, having lower trip generating entities paying lower costs. Final recommendation: ensure billing equity and transparency. Appropriate bills need to be sent to the entity responsible for paying them. Asking property owners to manage residential fee discounts and determine individual rates for each of their tenant businesses creates an unfair burden, hinders businesses' ability to accurately plan for costs, and generates unnecessary equity and oversight issues. Speaking of oversight, with at least 50% of projected street fee revenue coming from non-residential sources, it is critical that at least 50% of the members of the Oversight Committee represent businesses or business support entities. Recommendation: non-residential representation could include business owners, advocacy groups like Venture Portland, or nonprofits like churches and schools. As you've heard from hundreds of businesses in the last few days, Venture Portland is concerned, as are neighborhood businesses, about this legislation. We appreciate the effort that Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick have made to present this fee to neighborhood business districts, and we strongly encourage you to utilize the creative minds of Portland's business community to craft workable legislation that directly affects the bottom lines of these businesses and sustainable solutions to the issues that the city faces. On behalf of Venture Portland and neighborhood businesses and business districts, I urge you to slow down, implement the recommendations from Brian, and enable Portlanders to vote on issues that significantly impact them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Hey, folks, remember, wave if you like it, but please, go ahead.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, may I make a comment? Ms. Hale, just two comments. One, I just want to make it clear to our listeners that and viewers that it's not as if a small business is charged the same amount as a superstore because square footage is counted in. It's an amount sort of per 1,000 square feet. On the issue of the highest trip generators and the lowest trip generators, I hear what you're saying. Something to consider, though, is that the very highest trip generators tend to be things like schools and hospitals. So I don't know that we want a formula that has schools paying much more per trip than smaller organizations. So that's something we have to work through.
I like the suggestion on the calculator, by the way. As you know, those clunky categories are from the ITE manual, not from the imaginations of our staff. But your idea about combining them in a way that people can reach it better is very helpful. I bet we can do that. Thank you. Andrew.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, members of the council. I'm Andy Frazier, a small business owner and a resident in Portland, and chair the Alliance of Small Business Committee, and have been a part of small business groups and committees for a number of years now. I want to start off first by saying that I think everyone understands that there is a need to improve transportation. I don't think that is up for debate. Although I think we are moving too fast, too much, too soon, too aggressive. I don't know if either one of these concepts, the residential or the business, are ready to be voted on. And I personally do not believe that they should be voted on separately. I think this should be one package, and bring it here and discuss it. There seems to even be changes as we were sitting here today with the amendments on the 6, 8, 12, or whatever the final cost was. I think it would be fair for us to understand how that affects the revenue from the proposal of $40 to $50 million. My point being, I think we still have more answers than we do questions. As an example, I live here and work here and have a small business, and I'm going to pay this fee twice as a resident and as a small business owner. I recognize that you made the adjustment on the single owner credit, but I have a partner who's not my wife on my business, so I don't qualify. I think last week it was, sole proprietor or under 10 employees. I don't remember seeing the 10 employee part in here anymore. I guess what I'm getting at is I don't think we're ready for all this yet. Let's just take a pause and work it out. I think you can get people on the same page, but I don't think you should do it separately. I don't think you should pit residents against, the yogurt shop owner down the street by passing one and then, going for another one. So that's essentially what's going to happen. Just sitting here already, I've heard from a number of comments saying, hey, businesses are going to get a better deal after we vote this one in. When I think we all know that businesses are probably going to get a worse deal. That's typically what happens in these things. Let's just put it all out the table all at one time. I think that when we look at all of the other communities, we talk about the 28 other cities that have this type of fee. I don't argue with that. I'm sure you are 100% correct, but I would be surprised if they also all had an arts fee, if they also had fog, if they also had paid sick leave, if they also had BIT, BLT, if they had all of these other layers of fees that are being applied to us at the same rates. From my understanding, if they have it, it's usually at a lower rate than what we're paying, and these things add up, just like anything. There are going to be residents who can afford this, and it's going to be fine. There's going to be small businesses who can afford this, and they're going to be fine. But there's going to be a lot who can't. Those are the ones that we're devaluing at this point. From my understanding, we can't just go in and exempt who we want to exempt, and we shouldn't. We should have a package. We should bring it, and it should be fair and equitable to everyone out here, and allow us, small business owners to survive. Like I've mentioned before, it's one pot of money. They pay themselves after they've paid everyone that works for them and everything else that's going on. These things don't help. We've always said, we're willing to work, with all of you to come to some kind of solution. We know we need to improve transportation. It is a Portland problem, and we're willing to help. But I think we're going too fast. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, Steve. Anyone else? No. Hey, folks, please. I don't know why I have to keep repeating it, folks. Just wave your hands. So, Steve, you have anyone else you want to call?
Hold that.
I do not.
Okay, then let's just go to the sign-up sheet then, please.
All right, will the first three come up, please? Paul Romaine, Craig Rogers, Eric Fruits. They'll be followed by Paul Cohn, Robert Pfeiffer, David Faraday.
Good afternoon.
I guess my name was called first. I'll go first.
You're on.
Thank you. I'm Paul Romaine, Mr. Mayor, members of the commission. I am an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Petroleum Association. And I first want to do something that's very politically incorrect. I want to ask the people behind me to not wave their fingers or their signs or anything else, even if they agree 100% with what I'm saying, because all it does is distract from the people that we're trying to talk to. And it doesn't get a message across, so please keep your hands down. Thank you. That's number one. I know none of you can do that. you're an elective office.
I'm keeping my hands down, but please.
Yes, you can keep your hands down, too. Number two is I had the privilege or unfortunate privilege of being around 7 years ago when the street fee was around, and a lot of games were played with that fee. What happened was the at first it was one fee, then it was broken into three fees, then it became one fee, and it was all in an effort to avoid a public vote. And we played games on our side, too, and we pretty much forced it into a public vote, and then it was withdrawn. But it became a game plan, and I want to commend the ones I've dealt with, and I've dealt with two of you recently. You guys have done a great job in keeping it above board, basically talking about the issues. We may disagree, but you've been talking about the issues and keeping it where it should be, a policy discussion. We can still disagree. I understand the dilemma you're under. When we passed or you adopted a utility fee years ago that was supposed to go towards streets, it's gone. Whether those were good decisions or not, it's gone. It's not available. We raised the gas tax 6 cents a few years ago. I don't know what you've done with that money, but it may not be around. The Fed, it was a minor part, frankly, of all of this. So you do have a dilemma. The problem that I have with it is that we need to have that full discussion before you adopt something. And there will be that discussion because whatever you adopt, whether you send it to the ballot or not, will go to the ballot. It will be on the ballot one way or another, whether it's simply residential or a combination. There is enough people here that will actually put it on the ballot. So what we're saying to you is please, as you saw from the discussion before, there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that need to be put together. We need time. Please don't allow us to have that political advantage, if you would, of putting it on the ballot ourselves. Either you delay it and then work with us or put it on the ballot yourself. Don't let us do it. Thank you.
Paul, you've been around these issues for a while.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Can you reflect in the history here on why the other 28 cities didn't send the matter to the ballot?
I have absolutely no idea. Mr. Mayor, I make it a policy never to get involved in city politics. I've done that for years. I got dragged into it 7 years ago. I hated it then. I swore I'd never do it again, and all of a sudden this thing comes up, and I have clients. And we begged our way out of it, tried to, but yeah, no, I'm not going
there. There's some pretty conservative places like Grants Pass and Medford that did this by a council action.
Yeah,
so I don't know if they were called upon to send it to the voters or not, but we'll obviously talk to those cities and find out. But and then secondly, if this fails, whether it fails in this chamber or fails on the ballot, what's your suggestion for our next option?
Well, your plan B, first of all, I'm not the elected official.
No,
my job is to basically represent people who are having problems with this. That's why you're paid the big bucks. But
we hadn't noticed, but keep going.
Right. But the problem you have is that you made some choices, you being the council, not necessarily any of you individuals. You made some choices. You built a streetcar. Hey, that's a wonderful thing if you've got money. You're doing a study of light rail to Tigard, I understand. That's a great thing if you have the money. You put money into police and fire and public safety stuff. Yes, that's a great thing. But that's the discussion that needs to be had. We had the money dedicated to a particular purpose, and then it got moved. Should we relook some of those things? I mean, maybe it's a sacred cow, but maybe we need to look at some of the things that we're doing out there. And, you know, even police and fire, even though I love that stuff. And you're talking to a person here who's never voted no on a tax issue.
Right.
I vote for all of these things.
I think we will have to face the question, if this fails, of what's the next option? Is it a local gas tax? Is it a local sales tax? You know, those are the choices that have the potential of raising something about this amount of money. Now, the local gas tax would have to be about 50 cents a gallon.
Right.
To raise $50 million.
Right. And you would have to put that on the ballot because of a change we got in 2009. So.
Right. Right. So those are the other choices. As you may know, the city's workforce in the last 10 years has shrunk. We had 1,300 police officers 10 years ago, and now we have 1,200. So those positions that are funded by a combination of revenue sources in the general fund, including the utility franchise fee, there are less of them than there were 10 years ago. So in order to try to do this out of the utility franchise fee, we would be facing pretty massive cuts in police, fire, and parks.
And I agree with you. You might be. And that's a good public discussion, because when the public understands that, maybe they'd vote for this thing. I'm not saying I wouldn't vote for it. I mean, for me, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I do well. So I can afford to do all these things. I can be crazy with a lot of different financial issues. But what you need to do is convince the people that are marginal out there that they, too, can invest a little more, and they don't want to take it from these other things. And I think that's the only thing that seems to be lacking here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. Eric Fruits. First, I'm going to represent Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association. I'm a board member there. And I'll just start off by saying that we had a unanimous board vote and voted that to not support this measure as it is, for the main reason being that there has not been sufficient time for any input, really, from any neighborhood community. If you think about it, our last meeting that we had was just on Tuesday. We meet every other month. This measure, it's changing. It's literally changing by the hour, it seems. And there isn't any sort of opportunity for input. And when I look back at our dealings with the City of Portland, with the Portland Bureau of Transportation, they've been very productive. I mean, I would say that some of them have been over backwards to communicate with us. When the late fee pickup charge came in, they called us and asked if they can come present that to our meeting. With RECAP, which has been billed as minor and technical changes to the city code, we've had a huge amount of outreach from the city to discuss this. We have gotten absolutely zero contact from the city on this. It has been railroaded and pushed down on us with absolutely no input at all from neighborhood associations. And that, for that reason, we have opposed that. Our general membership also voted. If you're involved with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, you know that now no longer general memberships are allowed to have any voice. But our general membership passed a non-binding resolution that was slightly different that said that they do not support this measure unless it goes to a vote of the people. And so that's our standpoint on that. And also backing up, we also have a good good relationship with PBOT, and we also do recognize that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on our roads, and we think that it does need that sort of support. But at the same time, we are actually using our own money. We are not a rich neighborhood association because we have no businesses in our neighborhood. We are using our own money to maintain Coase Circle, which is owned by PBOT. That is PBOT's responsibility to maintain. We are now paying someone to mow that ourselves. That's our money that we are using from our garage sale revenues and from donations from people to pay for something that PBOT should be taking care of. I'm going to take off my LNA hat for a second and put on my economist hat, and there's something that's been really bugging me about this. I know that PBOT is very, very confident that they can impose this fee, tax, whatever, on other local and state and federal governments. But I've had some informal conversations with people at the federal government, and they seem very suspicious that this fee cannot be imposed upon them. That does two things. One is, you're wasting a lot of time trying to collect money from something that you can't collect money from. But also, B, that's going to really ruin your revenue projections. Your $40 million tax revenues could drop to something like $30 or $20 million.
Mr. Fritz, other cities that have adopted such fees have been able to collect them. I actually haven't asked about the federal government. From local governments, from schools, they have collected them. I also want to ask you, we've had several pretty well-publicized town halls over the past couple of months where we discussed the possibility of an $8 to $12 residential fee. Did you attend any of those town halls?
I did not, but I understand that things have been very different since those town halls, and that those town halls were more of a listening session on our end rather than a listening session on your end.
But we discussed the possibility of an $8 to $12 fee, which is what we're discussing today.
But wasn't it $11.56 last week?
I think that $11.56 is between $8 and $12.
Well, we can quibble. But again, this is a moving target. You know, I had some exchanges with PBOT regarding the food carts, for example. And one day they were insistent that food carts were going to have to pay. And then the next day they said, oh, we changed our mind. Now they do have to pay. Up until about 45 minutes before the announcement was made last night that you were taking the business section off, I got a tweet from PBOT saying, everyone has to pay, schools, businesses, federal government, just like everyone else. 45 minutes later, I get a call from Willamette Week saying, guess what? Everything's changed and everyone left the building and they won't talk about it.
Actually, we've made it clear that everyone will pay, but in terms of the precise composition of the non-residential fee, we're taking some more time to look at that, but we're also going to pass a resolution saying that If we do not pass a non-residential fee, there will be no residential fee.
Why can't we consider this all together at the same time? Because it really is a package. It's a package that we should that should be considered together. Because if you can't raise that money from the non-residential side, then you have to balance it on the back of the residential
side.
No,
we're not going to do that. He's just said that, and that's what's in the resolution. I think the reason for the division of the matter is that the residential fee may not be popular, but it's simple.
Well, I think we're all grown-ups here. We know exactly what's going on. We know that this is a divide-and-conquer strategy to separate the residents against the businesses, pit one against the other, and to play a game with the referendum system. I mean, we know that. I mean, come on. Don't play a game with us. We all know what's going on, and we know how the world works.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you, Council, for the opportunity this afternoon to be here. And I'm here as a citizen.
Could you give us your name?
Craig Rogers.
Thank you.
And my political education has been a gradual thing. It started in the fourth grade when I went to Barnum & Bailey Circus, and there was a gentleman sitting next to me by the name of Terry Shrunk, and they introduced him. It's the only time in my life that I ever asked for anybody's autograph. But it stayed pinned up on my bedroom wall for many years. And then in the sixth grade, my father's introducing me to a gentleman who was a seatmate on the flight back from San Francisco, and that was Mark Hatfield. And then I was in my early 20s, and I was in the lobby of a building, just a gentleman and I on a rainy day, and he was wearing a little pork pie hat, and back in the day, they'd put plastic over it on rainy days, and that was Wayne Morris. And I had an opportunity to introduce myself and have a conversation with him. So all those gentlemen I have a lot of respect for because they represent the democratic process, which the cornerstone is to vote. And I also had the good fortune to attend Dunaway Grade School, named after Abigail Dunaway. And if you get into looking at her life, she came out here on the Oregon Trail, family member dying along the way. Soon after they get there, her mother dies. Then their family suffers financial hardship. She opens up a store, and she listens to the clientele talking. And they're talking about a lot of their problems. And she realizes there's no resolution for their problems until they can vote. So she organizes people to vote, the cornerstone of democracy. And when she finally met her goal, there was nobody better than her from her experience in life to have gone through what she needed to get the right for women's vote. And in Multnomah County, Abigail Dunaway was the first woman to register to vote. And this is a major policy. And I think we deserve the right to vote on it. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let's take three more, and then I do want to call up Captain Sheffer because she's got a big event to deal with tonight, and she's here. So,
Paul Cohn, Robert Pfeiffer, David Faraday, please come up.
Go ahead, Paul. You're on.
Hi. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor. And I apologize. I prepared for 3 minutes, and I've done lots of editing during all the discussions here, but I'll try and keep it short. So my name is Paul Cohn, and I'm the Secretary-Treasurer for the City of Portland Professional Employees Association, which is also known as the COPEA chapter of the Professional Technical Employees Local 17. So I'm a PBOT employee, but I'm here today on union time as a union leader. As a labor rep to the Bureau's Budget Advisory Committee, I'm quite familiar with the Bureau's budgetary process, but I'm also the person who many PBOT employees reach out to when they're worried about layoffs due to budget cuts in our Bureau. So you could say that I've been privy to a lot of discussions about the PBOT budget, even though I'm not management. So on behalf of over 700 professional City of Portland employees, and especially PBOT's 130 COPEA members, I'm here to speak in support of Council taking action to adopt the proposed transportation user fee. And I should just say, you know, and I'm here to support it in some general form. I understand there's been a lot of discussion today. It's sort of obviously a moving target, but in general, we support the idea. So we PBOT engineers, planners, technicians, and other professional staff have been through too many rounds of threatened budget cuts and layoffs since reform efforts began. Years of revenue uncertainty have led to budget after budget with not enough money to provide basic maintenance and safety improvements to our critical infrastructure. Today's street fee plan is a culmination of a long, deliberative process that started almost 15 years ago with much public involvement and consultation with a wide range of stakeholders. While equity remains a difficult goal to meet in assessing fees, the current plan is a generally fair method of assuring that all Portlanders contribute to maintenance and safety of the transportation system that we all rely on. This fee will not fill the funding gap entirely, but we will make a critical improvement in our infrastructure that every resident and business will benefit from. So we, your professional staff, have seen firsthand the impact that deferred maintenance has on the cost and complexity of keeping over $8 billion of City of Portland public infrastructure in good condition. As we all know from our personal finances, avoiding maintenance costs in the present increases these costs in the future. So the question you have before today is whether to accept our maintenance responsibilities now or push higher costs upon future Portlanders. In our work, we strive to create lasting improvements for the city that coming generations will thank us for, and we urge Council to do the same by approving the street fee plan and setting people on a road towards the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Bob Pfeiffer, and I'm from an area that has been mentioned several times today, Park Rose. The concerns I'm having are that the paving of the streets, the way they're doing it, we just had a section out in my area on Fremont Street that was paved between 105th and 112th. That area wasn't really that bad. 122nd is a whole lot worse. Why didn't they do that first? I ride a motorcycle to work every day. That's my main means of getting around. I am very intimate with many, many of the roads and the potholes. I know them very well. I also saw something on the news. They were talking about the sidewalks being in bad repair and having to do those because they were a safety hazard. What about the potholes and motorcycles? Was a safety hazard also? Same concerns for liability? One thing I am for is I'd love to see this voted on rather than pushed to us. But if we're pushed to us, there's other things I'd want to see too. Like I see roadways put in, freshly paved, and within 2-3 weeks, they're being dug up because utilities have to put stuff in. That's ridiculous. There should be some sort of a moratorium, like a 3-year limit, where they cannot do any type of thing unless it's an emergency situation where, say, busted water main, something like that, where they have to go in. Because we see streets that are done, and then they're being torn back up, and that puts them right back into disrepair. They fall apart faster. And the concerns that I had about the people with low income, no income type has already been brought up. Another thing, too, is the monies that's been going out for curbs and for lanes and the flashing lights and light, they're great. But they're being done now with monies that you already have. Why can't we take this, the fees that are going to be taken for the roads, and use them strictly for the roads, nothing else? And get the roads done. And also one quick thing is we'd love to see some motorcycle lanes on our freeways where we can get by the really heavy traffic areas when they're stacked up really bad.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Mr. Mayor, would you mind if I...
No, please.
There's a couple of points that you made, Mr. Pfeiffer, that I want to respond to, not all of them, but one is that we share your concern that we should not see PBOT fixing up a street and then Northwest Natural or PGE tearing it up right after that. That's something the director Treat is really focused on. She came to me a couple of months ago and said that in Chicago they had a better system based on shared software with the utilities for ensuring that they did not have that kind of conflict and duplication. So we reached out to the utilities about 6 weeks ago and asked them to work with us in developing that kind of system. So that's something we're very focused on.
Okay, because I've been in Park Rose since 1964, and it seems like every time a road's done, you go right back through and they're digging it up.
We hear you.
Yeah.
On the issue of our doing work on streets that aren't as bad as some other streets, that goes back to what I was mentioning earlier, where if we wait for a street to need to be completely rebuilt, it can cost $1 million a lane mile to do it. But if we get to a street as it's just beginning to have problems, beginning to extend its life for a number of years, doing a treatment that costs just $10,000 per lane mile. So we do have to spend some of our resources on the streets that aren't that bad to prevent them from getting worse.
I understand that, but that section between 105th and 112th was no different than 112th to 122nd.
Well, we'll ask them for a response on that. Oh. Thank you. That's good. Thanks. Good afternoon. Welcome.
I'm David Faraday. I'm a retired architect. I'm still trying to get work, but I'm mostly self-unemployed. I'd like to take a little different perspective on how fees might be charged to help maintain and improve streets and roads, something I haven't heard of anyone mention up to this point. I kind of see cars into two categories. Certain cars are parked overnight in people's driveways, carports, garages. Other people's cars, in another category, are parked on the public street, in the street. The people parking in their garages and driveways are paying taxes on that property. The people that are parking on the street are paying nothing. They're getting a free ride, and if anything, the property taxes are really, in essence, supporting them to do that. My suggestion is perhaps overnight parking is something that needs to be looked at as a potential source of revenue for street improvements. It just seems almost unnatural. I'm sure that, you know, there's a lot of technical implications in terms of income and, you know, size of property and a whole lot of other things, but that seems to be something that needs to be addressed in the question being fairness, fair to property owners paying taxes and others getting the free ride with free parking. There was something on the late news last night that I noticed somewhere near the airport, some fellow having a problem with people not just parking overnight, but parking extended periods of time to take a trip to Hawaii or wherever, I don't know. This would address that problem at the same time. So that's...
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Thanks. So let me call Captain Sheffer because I know she's got to be on Alberta Street here shortly when things start getting interesting out there. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is Kelly Sheffer, and I am a captain for the Portland Police Bureau, currently in the Traffic Division. And I am here today in support of the Bureau of Transportation, our partners, as it relates to our shared traffic safety goals. The first would be the shared vision of reaching zero traffic fatal crashes in the city of Portland. And secondly, significantly reducing all crashes, especially involving our vulnerable road users, pedestrians, and bike riders. BBB and PBOT routinely work together to educate road users around traffic safety and after a crash to look at the roadway engineering and or identify locations where additional enforcement could reduce crashes. Will not be able to reach our desired goals through enforcement alone. Most contributing factors to crashes are human error. However, 28% of the time, road design is a contributing factor. PBOT has identified, as we've heard, the high crash corridor roadways where reconfiguration or improvements would significantly reduce environmental factors contributing to our crashes. The economic cost of motor vehicle crashes in the state of Oregon for 2012 was $1.35 billion. That's $348 per Oregonian. A 2011 National Safety Council stat put that the economic cost of one motor vehicle crash fatality is $1,400,000. Last year, Portland had 36 crash fatalities, and in 2012, we had 33 crash fatalities. Funding for PBOT will absolutely improve our traffic safety for all road users. And so I'm here just to say that in support of our partners that we work together with routinely.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate all you and your team do out there every day. Thank you. Okay, let's call the next three, please.
Next three, Sally Jockin, Terry Parker, Robert Parker. They'll be followed by Joe Walsh, Elaine Friesenstrong, and David Straw.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
I'm Sally Jockin. I live in Southeast Portland. I was one of the people who participated in both the phone survey and one of the town halls. And I think street maintenance and safety are extremely important, and I strongly approve of having a plan to take care of them. But I was amazed to learn that the funding gap for this essential work is at least $800 million. I haven't lived here but 5 years, so I don't know. Didn't know the whole history of this. But I wonder if a decline in gasoline sales and therefore in the generation of gas taxes created this gap. I mean, didn't anybody notice? Why were road conditions and street safety allowed to develop into an emergency? Everyone knows that when you don't take care of infrastructure maintenance, it will cost you more down the road. Fortunately, Commissioner Novick is now determined to fix this problem. But I think that essential services like street maintenance and safety should get adequate funding from the regular city budget. 2% of the general fund was obviously not enough for transportation needs. If the city does not have enough general funds for essentials like this, then revenue should be raised, and it should be raised from businesses and individuals who are most able to pay. However, since we have an emergency situation now, I can see that it might be necessary to institute a special fee, but for a limited time only, to reverse the neglect. But it should not be a flat fee based on single-family, multiple-family households. Why should people in a single-family house managing to make ends meet, if managing that at all, pay the same amount as the wealthiest individuals living in Portland? And how about all the individuals who work in Portland or come here for other activities and don't live here, but who regularly drive or take buses on our streets? Shouldn't they be responsible for these fees as well? Why would we model our fee system on Oregon City, which is about 1/20th the size of Portland and is not attracting the same number of people working there and going to activities? So I was shocked to hear that other Portlanders who were polled, like I was, preferred a flat fee to other progressive funding mechanisms. And I wonder if they really understood that flat fees are regressive and unfair. Everyone uses the streets and everyone needs safety, but if we create a fee system for this essential service, it should be linked to people's financial situation as reflected by their property tax or their state or federal income tax or their total assets.
Sally, this is great testimony. I want to ask you to wrap up soon, though.
What?
I want to ask you to wrap up soon, though. Thank you.
Yes. If city council's not sure how to raise revenue in the age of inequality, you should consider forming a revenue advisory group. Local economics professors have offered to work on this, and you should take them up on it. Thank you.
Thank you. One point, you're right that part of the problem with the gas tax is a decline in that people are driving more efficient vehicles or they're driving less.
Right, that's
but the
great.
Big, you know, the big problem, the bigger force at work here is that the Congress stuck the fee at 18 cents in 1993 and haven't changed it since.
Yes, I didn't. So I don't know about that.
That's the bigger problem.
Till today, whatever the problem is, you didn't just find out about it.
Well, we didn't, but they get to adopt the federal gas tax, so we don't.
No, I understand that gas tax is not city council's fault or Portland's fault, but not doing something about it already. I don't know exactly whose fault it is.
All of us. Thank you. Me included. I was here 13 years ago talking about this.
Fix it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Terry.
Terry Parker from Northeast Portland. I wrote for 3 minutes. I'll try to be brief. The city that works is no longer working. Housing is becoming less affordable. Portland is fast becoming the city that discriminates, especially as it applies to regressive taxation applied to motorists, seniors, and households of one. Transparency has been slanted, incomplete, and is cloudy at best. Just preaching the sermon about the gas tax not keeping up is short-sighted. The full picture requires total disclosure of how the gas tax is being raided and siphoned off to pay for social engineering, including alternative infrastructure where the users don't pay their fair share for their stuff. Equity requires that before any street fee goes forward, sustainable user fees be assessed on the alternative modes, such as bicycling and transit. Transit is subsidized at 65 cents per passenger mile. And these are not entitlement programs. Until bicyclists clearly demonstrate they are following all the traffic laws, any spending that encourages more mayhem bicycling needs to be placed on a strict diet. Any fee needs to be reflective of the number of people in a household, not the type of dwelling. Likewise, annual increases are both an attack on and discriminatory towards seniors and other people on fixed incomes, and even people on lower middle class incomes. Given that the street fee will also pay for sidewalks in areas that do not have them, equity must be applied with PBOT taking over the financial responsibility for all maintenance and repair of existing sidewalks. Finally, truly representative government requires that transportation advisory committees be accurately proportioned to the cross-section of the mode split, not a McCarthyism vetted one-sided stack deck of the usual anti-car subjects. The structure of this street fee is a tax that must be equitably modified, then go before voters, and be debated in the court of public opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Robert Parker. I live in Southeast Portland. Thank you for the instructional on the policy. I hadn't heard a lot about it. A lot of the questions I had were answered. A lot of the questions I didn't have were answered. And I'm going to try to just say a couple of things that I haven't heard really come up much. The first of all, in pertaining to what Commissioner Saltzman pointed out, that I have seen a lot of levies and bonds proposed, and many of them, most of them passed. I voted for most of them. Some of them didn't pass, and then later on were passed after some adjustment. And the reason being stated for this, why it's not going through that, is simply because it barely has 50% of the support. To me, it seems that if something only has 50% of the support, it needs to be changed before it's rolled out. The idea that we should not put it to a vote because people don't want it seems anti-democratic to me. And I've never had any problem with paying for things that made sense before. I don't know if I would approve of it necessarily. As it's written right now, a lot of the information that I heard today was new. One thing that I haven't heard addressed is the fact that a lot of the things that we have approved through levies and bonds have been things like schools and public utilities and public services. And by charging them the street fee, what you're actually saying is that the measures that we have approved, the things that we have said are underfunded, you're now taking money away from things that we've already asked to give more money to. And so you're saying that something that we don't approve is more important than what we've explicitly approved.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
The next three, Joe Walsh, Elaine Friesenstrang, David Stroh. Will you come up, please? And they'll be followed by Lynn Munson, Bob Clark, and John Shetterly.
Hey, Joe, go ahead.
My name is Joe Walsh. I speak only for myself today, and I need to understand exactly what you're doing, because as other people have testified, the target keeps moving all over the place. So my understanding is you want to pass a tax on everybody in Portland, including churches and schools, which have an abundance of money, and it will cost them anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And you also want to set some kind of weird system up depending on your income, and then you got to figure out how you're going to really build this. And, of course, the first thing that was suggested was that we should put this on our water and sewer rates, and I understand Commissioner Fish skyrocketed straight up. So if I have that, if that's the understanding of what's happening, I have to just laugh. I mean, this is so incredibly stupid, I have to laugh. I mean, I cannot imagine any adult coming up with this. And then you have the audacity to keep us waiting for 3 hours while you bring your little cronies up here to tell you how wonderful you are, including the AFL-CIO. What is that? The AFL-CIO president can afford to do this. There are people that I know that cannot afford to do this, and that's the problem. And you'd say, okay, we're going to lose the vote. So we're not going to vote. Are you insane? Are you totally insane? Have you completely lost it? And where the hell is Steve Novick?
Yeah. 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 Go ahead. You're on.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Elaine Friesen-Strang, and I live in Northeast Portland. I'm here today as an executive council member for AARP of Oregon, and I'm speaking on behalf of 65,000 AARP members in the city of Portland. Safe and walkable streets are critical for people of all ages, especially children, older people, and people with disabilities. We applaud the council's commitment to creating a livable city and ensuring safety and mobility options for all. We also recognize that funding is a critical element in making this happen. However, based on what's currently outlined in the proposed fee, AARP has grave concerns. Unless key issues are adequately addressed, we cannot support this fee and believe it could prove inequitable and burdensome to the most vulnerable Portlanders. AARP Oregon calls on this council to prioritize equity, transparency, and accountability in its deliberation regarding the fee. These are our equity concerns. User fees need to minimize burden to individuals, families, older adults, and people with disabilities who live on limited incomes. In addition to the sliding fee scale structure, it needs to include a provision for a fee waiver for the lowest income households, regardless of the type of housing they live in. And the fee collection needs to be accessible and equitable. AARP Oregon has submitted a letter to Mayor Hells and the commissioners, which details our concerns more fully. We urge you to do the right thing and stand up for equity, accountability, and transparency, and not rush into a solution that's going to burden the most vulnerable. Thank you for this opportunity to express our views.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is David Strau.
A little closer to the mic, please, Dave.
Sorry.
Thank you.
My name is David Strau. I'd love to name off a whole bunch of organizations that I've been a member of, but I can't. 6 years on Kitts Hobbs Medicaid Advisory Committee. I volunteer for the past 3 years for an arts organization here in town that helps seniors.
Just get a little closer.
That has nothing to do with this issue, but I noticed everybody else coming up had all these titles. So,
it's okay.
And, Charlie, I understand that you said you wanted to get all the facts first. And then the rest of us could speak. I hope I'm considered one of the facts.
Please.
I hope I've made the cut. I want to thank Saltzman for understanding what democracy is.
Yes, thank you.
I don't know if I'm for or against this. It's a moving target. I had 3 minutes written out before I got here. And everything you said today moved all the targets. If nothing else, we need a vote so that we can stop the moving target, find out what it is we're doing, what it is we're going to vote for, and then decide. Charlie, you asked one of the guys earlier, well, if the vote fails, what do I do next? Well, I'd like to tell you what you do next. You be a leader, not a dictator. You're not our parents. You're not a dictator. We're not your children. You're a leader. All of you are. You come to us with your good ideas and convince us. We're the citizens. We can say yes or no. Saltzman has faith in us. I wish the rest of you did. I can't say if I'm for this or against it, but I want to know, and I want to know, and I want to vote for it. And that's what I'm here to say today. Please, just give us the vote and let us know what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Lynn Munson, Bob Clark, John Shetterly. They'll be followed by Andy Cateno, Rob Sadowski, and Aaron Brown.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Bob Clark, Southeast Portland. I volunteer for the Oregon Taxpayer Association. The amount of the proposed tax is very excessive for homeowners, and the Taxpayer Association urges council to sharply reduce the rate. For one, the average street fee for those Oregon cities you've mentioned here is only a little over $5 per month per single family home, not the proposed $12 or whatever it is as it moves. For another thing, the original former Transportation Commissioner Adams had a $5 proposal on about 6 or 7 years ago. And if you adjust that for inflation, you still get about only about $5.50 for his proposal for a street fee. Since Adams' proposal, there's been a 6-cent increase in the gasoline tax. And if I look at the city auditor's review of the transportation budget, discretionary budget, it looks like it's been growing like 5% a year for the better part of a decade, and that's twice the rate of inflation. So these are things we didn't really get from these town halls, how the budget has changed in the actual numbers for the last umpteen years. So I know there was a drop-off there for a bit in the 2008 with the Great Recession. But overall, things are still growing fairly robustly. I know you got restrictions, but a lot of that doesn't come through in the presentation we've had. We also recommend that the two measures be combined and citizens be allowed to vote on this special, we call it a tax, because it is saying it's a replacement for a gasoline tax shortfall. So that makes it a tax in our mind, and we think that that should be referred to voters. The city charter is born in the spirit of the referendum and the initiative, and talks of referring special levies like this to vote. These types of special taxes to voters. The secondary, I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
I'm just curious, Mr. Clark, since we don't often have the benefit of your wisdom on these things, do you have if this particular approach has significant shortcomings, do you have an alternative approach you want us to consider?
Well, I think we'd be happy with the reduced rate we've recommended here, somewhere in the $5, $6 area for the single-family homeowner. That gets us, we're not totally trusting this big new figure we're getting of $12 per month, and it would raise our water and sewer bills by 10% or more if it hits right now. A $12 fee for the average water and sewer bill, I think, is like 10%. Would be a 10% increase, and you're already raising it 5%. So we're talking a hefty increase in our water and sewer bill effectively, because this, even you might say it's not related, but it is related to your total water and sewer bill.
If the figure was lowered, as you suggested,
yeah,
and it was referred to the public for a vote, would you support it?
Oh, yes, I think so. But I can't talk for all the members. I'm just a volunteer, but I'm pretty active in the community.
Great, thank you. Thanks very much.
You're
good
welcome.
Afternoon.
Hi, my name is John Shetterly. I'm just a homeowner in Northeast Portland. I have to say I'm against this, but as a responsible voter in the city, I think if it was worded differently and rewritten better, I think a vote by the people, it would pass. I agree with what Dan said. Thank you for the support. Some of the things I thought about while we were sitting here this afternoon was, suppose Congress comes to light and changes the gas tax. Could this be worded where this would be decreased, stopped, or adjusted accordingly? I don't like the open end that here's this tax and you want us to pay it for the rest of our lives, and there's no way of stopping it if there's anything else. Takes care anyhow. I think it could be passed by a vote if it was worded properly and put up to the people for vote.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mayor, can I just ask, because there was a very thoughtful comment, and I don't know that I know the answer. So why can't a future council discontinue this tax with or without a sunset? Is there something in the referral that requires this to be in perpetuity?
As it's now constructed, the referral is simply the safeguards on how it's spent, right? Not on what the rate is or what anything else. It's on how the money would be spent, because there's a concern in the community. We heard it in all the forums of, look, this fee could come in for this purpose, and then future councils could wander off and spend it on other things.
Right.
So I understand. I hear that concern. I understand that fear. So let's put that in the charter and say, if there's a transportation fee, it goes for transportation, period. And that was the point of the charter amendment. But he's making another suggestion, which is, if the federal government came back to life and started increasing the gas tax and indexing it to inflation like they should have done in 1993, if they do that, you know, hope springs eternal, and maybe it's springing eternal for you. I'm teasing a little bit, but okay, let's assume that might actually happen. Then we should be prepared to reduce this fee or eliminate it if they really did their job. So again, we're here because the federal gas tax, if indexed in 1993, would be 30 cents today, not 18.
And if
that actually happened, we wouldn't need this anymore.
Because a couple of people testifying have floated the idea of a sunset, and I don't know how I feel about that conceptually, but just to your point, sir, I mean, the council can withdraw this fee at some point in the future. So to your point about if the gas tax is raised or there's some other backfill, as I read this, and the mayor just confirmed, it doesn't lock us into any period of time for this fee. So a future council could do that. And are you suggesting we have an explicit trigger that says if something happened, we would act in the future?
Well, you know, how many councils have voted to decrease taxes ever? You know, take away a tax.
I'm just trying to understand.
I would say it should be written into it that, you know, I don't know how to do that. I'm not a.
No, there's a way to do that.
It's an option. I thought you made an interesting point. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I just think there ought to be a stipulation at least, you know, where this could go away someday if other means were to.
Yeah. No, and there's been talk in transportation circles. Andy Cotugno's here. There's been talk in transportation circles for years about moving away from the gas tax entirely and going to a mileage-based system by which the federal and state government assess us what they now assess us through a gas tax, that there'd be a transponder in each one of our cars and that we would pay based on how much we drive. And that makes some people crazy because they think the government's going to be following them around. But nevertheless, the federal and state government have been talking about that. If they ever actually worked up their courage and did that, it would change the whole foundation under this discussion, and we might not need this anymore either. So, you know, he raised a very valid point of what happens if they finally bestir themselves. And I appreciate
you. That's why I want to vote on it. Okay. Put it up for a vote, Charlie.
Yes.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
We're going to fix the potholes, remember?
That's why we're here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next
are
Andy Cotugno, Rob Sadowski, Aaron Brown. They'll be followed by Brian Alfaro, Malcolm Chaddock, and Gary Herbeck, if I have that name spelled.
Mr. Alfano is not here. That's what Heather said earlier. Is that right? He didn't come back, did he? Okay. So go ahead, please, Andy.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the commission. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Metro Council in support of this ordinance. This hearing conflicts with our regular council meeting time, so they're unable to be here, and they asked me to come and provide this testimony. But I'm also here to express some concerns that they asked me to share with you as well. Your proposed action is exactly in line with the direction the region set some time ago, recognizing that not just the feds, but the state are not going to bail you out of this operations maintenance needs. And Mayor Hales, I would suggest even if the feds do wake up and start raising federal funds, they're not going to go to operations and maintenance at the local level. They're more likely to go to improvements to the larger highways. And even if they wake up, you're still going to be stuck with this part of the problem. And we know that the asset that you're responsible for is vital to the economic viability and livability of the community, and it's much more expensive to replace if it's not taken care of. And you're in very good company. The region as a whole concluded we're not going to meet local maintenance needs, and a dozen other jurisdictions in this region have adopted local actions to begin to address the need. There's a lot of features about this that I think really stand the test of a really good framework. Obviously, there are parts that are being raised here that it's sort of hard to